Chapter 3. Speeding south, away from the orcs, Temur bit his tongue hard, preferring to draw his own blood than vent his rage pointlessly at the static that had replaced Ghazan's voice. He focused the energy of anger into greater velocity for his bike. He willed the terrain to flow faster. He opened a channel to Meixner. He got through, and he heard what he thought was the colonel's voice, but the man was drowned out by the sound of explosions. The white scars raced for the bastion. They flew over the land. They were a blinding streak of war. The orc force had vanished in the distance behind them. It seemed to Temur, though, that the greenskins' laughter followed them across the terrain. His ritual scars burned. His blood was up with fury and with humiliation. He would tear the sky in half before he saw his company defeated by orc strategy. He still had difficulty in believing that there even was such a thing. Geography was his enemy now, too. He needed to be at the siege of the bastion now. But no matter how hard he pushed his bike, he could not compress the distance to nothing. The Thunderhawk was faster than the land speeders and bikes, and he ordered Pilot Naku to take the Kajog stand and its assault squad on ahead. The gunship couldn't cross that distance instantly either. By the time it reached the battlefield and Naku began appraising Temur of the situation, the orcs had had far too much time to wreak their havoc.
"Is the bastion still standing?"
Temur asked.
"It is."
"The walls are holding against the bombardment?"
"Not exactly," Naku said. "The Iron Guard has managed to draw the greenskins away from the walls for the moment."
"How?"
"By mounting a charge."
The implications of that tactic sank in. Infantry charging heavy armor. Temur could imagine nothing other than a massacre.
"What is the status of the colonel's men?"
"They are still fighting."
No elaboration was needed. Temur gave the Mordians a mental salute. He understood what they were doing. Their assault would distract the orcs, who would seek to destroy the humans before them and save the bastion for later. He also understood the irony that loomed. The bastion might be standing after all the forces it was meant to shelter were dead.
Faster!
The terrain a vibrating blur beneath his wheels.
Faster!
The wind against his armor going from whistle to howl to shriek. Its transfiguration of fury, taking it from the voice of the moon to the voice of Chogoris.
Faster! And there, the bastion in sight, veiled by black smoke.
On the plain before it, heroic but outmatched men fighting visions of giant mechanized violence. The voice of Chogoris, calling him to battle, calling him to be wind himself, to be the gale, to be the violence of speed. He rode with 1,000 generations of tribesmen at his back. The wind was their voice, too. In his mind's eye, the spirits raised the curved blades of their tulwars high. As he topped the final rise before the plain of battle, the ancient cavalry flowed with him. Temur Khan took to the field with a momentum to shatter worlds. At his sides and following was the scythe of the Fifth Brotherhood. And if an infantry force had been before him, the battle would have been over. Human or Xenos, 100 or 10,000, no such enemy could withstand the shock of that charge. But no such enemy was here. The enemy had taken the form of metal monsters, and they were laying waste to a different infantry. What the Mordian Iron Guard had achieved was worthy of monuments.
The mortals had 3 chimeras at their disposal and had hurled them against the orc armor as they had their own fragile bodies. The chimeras were outnumbered and outgunned. Their armor was not in the same league as that of the orc machines. One of them was already a smoking wreck, identifiable only by the sheer amount of blackened, twisted metal. The other 2 were damaged, but still fighting. They had destroyed 1 of the orc tanks. And the foot soldiers of the Iron Guard were still charging again and again. The sun shone resplendent on their uniforms of blue and red and gold. They were pride, and they were discipline. More than that, they were heroism, rushing to fight what could not be fought. Worthy of monuments, rewarded with a mass grave. 2 of the battle wagons moved around the field on random trajectories, pouncing on whatever large clusters of Mordians were closest at any moment. Gigantic, articulated claws were mounted on their hulls. They reached down into the mass of soldiers and pulled them up by the score, crushing them, spraying the ground with blood. The attacks were savage. With the claws, the orcs had found a way to exaggerate even the violence of war. The machines appeared to revel in the sadism, to drink in the vitae that they squeezed from their prey as if downing casks of chinua. At the same time, the main guns fired into the more distant formations, shattering charges, hurling body parts high into the air. The Iron Guard had diverted the orcs from the goal of the bastion and had given them the gift of enormous slaughter. The orcs had accepted the gift with glee. As he descended the slope, Temur saw a battle wagon ram the side of one of the chimeras. The front of the orc machine looked like a fist with teeth. The chimera's gun fired 1 last time. The shell might as well have been wet sand. The battle wagon was untouched. It collapsed the flank of the APC as if it were vellum. Flame and smoke poured out of the wound. The tank rode up over the chimera, crushing it down. The Mordian vehicle exploded. The blast was muffled beneath the weight of the battle wagon. Fire enveloped the tank, an embrace and surrender. The battle wagon drove out of the flames. The huge, jagged metal cluster at its front looked like a snarl of triumph. The remaining chimera was limping, slowed by its injury. Its moments were numbered. Its crew pushed it towards another of the battle wagons. The main gun fired and fired again. Its heavy stubbers sent an unending stream of bullets at the target. Its opponent had 2 cannons on staggered levels above the hull. They were short, primitive, and with a bore twice that of the Chimera's weapon. Their fire was a syncopated double beat, the sound of a monstrous heart. The accuracy of the Iron Guard was impeccable. Every shot hit. The orcs missed and missed again. Yet the outcome of the duel was preordained. The men were doomed. Their ordnance did little more than render the forward armor of the battle wagon even more grotesque. The orc shells kicked up huge fountains of earth where they hit. Only 1 strike would be needed to kill the chimera. The Karjog's stand crisscrossed the field, striking at the tanks. Naku was being more conservative than Toktar had been. The White Scars could not afford to lose both Thunderhawks, nor could Naku fire with as much freedom. He did not have a plane filled with greenskins below him. His targets were larger and fewer. The gunship's heavy bolters and las cannons harried the battle wagons, scoring telling hits against the weaker top and side armor. The Thunderhawk cannon had killed one of the other tanks.
Its corpse was a gutted shell on the eastern edge of the battle. The assault squad had deployed and was vectoring in on the tank closing with the Chimera.
"For the Khan!"
Temur voxed to the company.
"For the Emperor!"
his warriors answered. And though he felt the truth of the battle cry to the depths of his soul, he also thought, "For me!" He owed the orcs a debt of humiliation. He led the charge towards the nearest battle wagon. The tank turned to meet the bikes. Its claw reached out with delighted hunger. In the great plain of Debris, Ghazan watched Arik detonate the charge on the hatch. The blast was muffled by the earth. The hatch blew in, its broken halves tumbling into the shaft it had concealed. It was wider than the one near the scrap heap and had three sets of rungs. Ghazan and the squad descended quickly. Kusala waited to go down in parallel with Ghazan.
"Zadyan Arga," he whispered, "are you sure that this is..."
Ghazan cut him off.
"My level of certainty is irrelevant. I am not deciding on the best tactic, Brother Sergeant. I would not think of contradicting the Khan in such matters. I am accepting what is destined, and neither he, nor you, nor I have the right to question fate."
"As you say,"
Kusala still sounded uneasy. At the bottom of the shaft was a wide passageway, much larger than at the first location. The insulting orc versions of lumen globes illuminated its length. It stretched a long way to the left and right before it curved, and there were many branching corridors. There were signs here, too, of quick, crude blasting, but part of the tunnel was a natural formation. The orcs were making use of a pre-existing cave system. The walls vibrated with the beat of endless industry. The heart of the Manufactorum was not far. Tegusal was looking to the left, his head cocked, listening.
"This way," he said. "The heaviest sound is coming from this direction."
Kusala concurred.
"Forward, then. That will guide us to what we must destroy."
Ghazan took a step to follow. He stopped, rooted to the spot. He tried to walk. His legs refused to move. Tegusal and Kusala were right. Logic dictated they take this route. Fate, inexorable and mysterious, called him the other way.
"No,"
he said. Kusala turned, eyebrows raised. He said,
"How can there be any question about our path?"
"There isn't."
He turned and started walking to the right. His body unlocked. His legs wanted to rush him to the appointed encounter. Since setting foot in the tunnel, he had felt the tug grow stronger yet. Time was a torrent, a cataract, and all the seconds were falling to the great clash at the bottom.
"No choice," he thought. "None at all. There is no such thing."
Kusala did not follow yet.
"What will we find that way?"
he called.
"What we must, if we want to win," Ghazan said.
He understood Kusala's reluctance. Without the impulse of his vision, he would see his own actions as those of a madman, or possibly something far more dishonorable. If they followed the other path, it was true that they must find the heart of the orc's tank production. But that wasn't enough. Ghazan knew, as surely as if the land had cried out its secrets to him as he had dropped below the surface of the moon, that he was following the only road that could lead to victory. The true threat lay elsewhere. He paused and looked back at the scouts. He was pushing them to go against all common sense and possibly against the orders of their Khan. He said,
"Brother Sergeant, the struggle that lies before me is destined, but it may not be for you as well. I will go on alone, if necessary, and there will be no dishonor if you choose to part company with me here. But if you choose to walk this path with me, you will strike a greater blow against the enemy. I am certain of that.
The situation at the bastion is desperate, Kusala said. We have to stop the tanks. Our failure would be catastrophic.
Then all the more reason why you should come with me. The scouts looked back and forth between them. Ghazan regretted putting them in a position where their loyalty to their sergeant was forced to contend with their spiritual awe of Azadian Arga. They were, to a man, keeping their faces neutral. Kusala shook his head and walked forwards to join Ghazan.
I do wish you could share your visions with me, he said.
Ghazan smiled. You must rely on faith, Brother Sergeant.
I am. Believe me, I am. And it is being tested.
It shall be rewarded. Kusala said nothing to that, but he gestured to the scouts. They moved on, following Ghazan. For the first few minutes, they seemed to be heading into another abandoned sector of the complex. The sounds of construction grew more distant, and they did not encounter any orc traffic. There were so many branches, though, that it would have been easy for considerable numbers of greenskins to be moving in parallel with them, with neither group being aware of the other's presence. After about 50 meters, the tunnel forked into three. Ghazan stopped in the center of the intersection, listening for the pain of the moon and the imperative of fate. He chose the left-hand fork. A minute later, that tunnel split into four. The white scars moved deeper and deeper into the labyrinth. After the first branches, Ghazan let the scouts take the lead. There were sounds ahead once more, and it was impossible to tell in the web of caverns how far ahead and down which passageway they were. The guttural orc voices bounced from wall to wall, mixed with the clang of hammers, the whine of tools, and the crackle of dispersing energy. Other noises, too, less easily defined, but all suggestive of a great deal of activity.
Why the different construction sites? Kusala wondered. Not very practical. More planning and effort than I would expect from greenskins.
These orcs are full of surprises, said Ghazan. I think we will find that there is a reason.
Step by step, branch by branch, one of the scouts would take point, moving in silence and within the shadows. The next brother would follow half the length of the corridor behind, providing overwatch. The first would observe the intersection, and when he was sure it was clear, signal for the rest of the squad. Ghazan would point to the next branch to take, and the cycle repeated. The further into the maze they went, the more signs of occupation they encountered. Cables running along the floor, greater illumination, ruined bits of machine, and more of what passed for orc art. Crude illustrations of their monster gods, scrawls that were meant to be pictures of orcs in battle, and the angular, jagged runes that were the greenskins' barbaric excuse for a language. They reached another fork. Far more noise to the left. Ghazan felt the pull to the right. Kusala looked like he was about to say something, but held his peace. Tegusal had point. Arik was guarding the rear. The squad was halfway down the current section of tunnel when Arik hissed a warning. They froze, waiting, weapons at the ready. A minute passed. No enemy appeared.
What was it?
Kusala asked Arik.
A shadow moved, said the scout.
I think we might be being followed.
Too stealthy for an orc.
My thought too, Brother Sergeant. I did see something, though.
Kusala doubled up the rear guard. They advanced even more cautiously. But at the next intersection, Bokegan also reported movement. Tegusal watched the Auspex. Its screen showed a single blip, then nothing.
Hard to tell if that was a legitimate contact, he said.
We will treat it as one, Kusala told him. The day you ignore a possible threat is your last.
He turned to Gazan.
We are being shadowed.
Yes.
They needed to neutralize this enemy, force whoever was following them out into the open. No opportunity arose at the next two junctions, but at the third, the route took the squad into a large cavern. It had been a big natural formation to start with, and the orcs had expanded it further. The tunnel opened into it about two-thirds of the way towards its roof. A catwalk crossed the space to the other side. The cavern was filled with cables thick as tree trunks, pipes wide enough to ride a bike through. Steam and narrow jets of flame burst from cracks in roughly patched seams and joints. Arcs of blue lightning crackled along the lengths of the cables. The conduits of energy and fuel arrived from dozens of different openings in the walls. The tangle achieved something resembling order towards the far end of the cavern, about 5 meters above the floor. There, the cables and pipes joined into two enormous braided hybrids. One carried on straight out of the chamber, the other branched diagonally to the right. Some 30 meters below, on the floor of the cavern, the orcs labored over roaring, sparking, grinding mechanisms. Gazan guessed these machines had something to do with regulating the flow of energy and fuel. The cavern was some sort of power plant. The white scars were going to have to cross in the open. The noise made by the orcs below would give them cover. The uproar of snarls and machinery was almost physical. A small war could be waged on the catwalk without drawing attention.
Auspex?
Kusala asked Tegusal. More readings, Brother Sergeant. Brief, but definite.
And the position of our trackers?
To the rear.
Gazan and Kusala exchanged looks. The cavern was a few 100 meters wide. Kusala said,
If they don't attack before we reach the other side, we'll gain a significant lead. They might lose us.
If they're orcs, they can just move faster, said Tegusal.
No, Kusala said. If they were orcs, they would already have attacked. This is something else.
Gazan looked at the other end of the catwalk.
This is the only path forward, he said.
Kusala grinned.
You're proposing we blow up the bridge in our wake?
Your mission involves sabotage, does it not?
Kusala gestured at the cables.
We could do a lot of damage here. Perhaps cripple the Manufactorum.
No, that would draw too much attention. We still don't know how the enemy is outmaneuvering our forces on the battlefield. And the true threat is not mechanical.
Knowing what the orcs are attempting will serve little good if they have already done it.
They haven't. Not yet.
Destiny would not allow it. For what purpose was he here if his actions were meaningless? He did not believe such a perversity was possible. The war on the moon would hinge on the battle he must wage.
We are close to our goal, he said to Kusala.
Though we don't know what it is.
Have faith, Brother Sergeant, he said again.
Kusala looked serious. I do.
There was a pointed ambiguity to the way he insisted on those two syllables. This time he articulated his doubts.
But forgive me, Zadyan Arga, if I ask whether you place too much faith in your particular interpretation of your visions.
I do not, Kazan spoke with cold anger. We're wasting time. I suggest we destroy the catwalk behind us.
Kusala nodded and gave instructions to Arik. The white scars moved out into the cavern. They kept strict watch on three directions at once: their destination, the cave floor, and the rear. Covered by Bokigan, Arik set demolition charges at the entrance and midway point of the catwalk. The orcs below didn't notice. Tegusal kept his eye on the Auspex. Two-thirds of the way across, the scout voxed.
Multiple contacts, closing fast.
Ready to detonate,
Kusala ordered. The space marines raised their bolters. Shadows made of speed and blood shot out of the gloom of the tunnel. Eldar! Kazan recognized their red armor and white serpentine runes. They were of that Xenos sect that, like the White Scars, valued velocity on the battlefield. Clearly anticipating the destruction of the catwalk, a handful of the Eldar warriors leapt off it and onto a pipe that ran parallel for most of its length. Xenos and Space Marine weapons zeroed in on each other. Kazan saw his struggle teeter on the edge of ruin.